Hello, welcome to the Hoop Collective Podcast. We talk about the NBA, which we are doing on Thursday afternoon. Joining me from Fort Myers, well, not really Fort Myers. I always say Fort Myers, but it's Naples. Front office insider Bobby Marks. Hey, Bobby.
Hello, Brian. Fort Myers is the airport. RSW right. is the airport here. And if you go 30 miles south, the furthest part of, well, I guess 75 before you go to Miami, you will find Naples, Florida.
And why is it called RSW? Well, I'll tell you, because you all come to this podcast for aviation news. Stands for Regional Southwest Florida Airport. Okay. Thank you, Bobby, for allowing me, you know, intercede with that. Joining us from Los Angeles, although he's just back from East Lansing. This is home away from home. And he's wearing a Red Bull Thailand t-shirt, is Om Young Masuk.
Wendy, I just want you to know, it's only been about a week that I got over jet lag from my Asia trip for about, I think I was over there for 20 days. So I hope you don't feel the same thing that my wife and I did, which was we couldn't sleep for probably about 2 weeks.
Yeah, it's hard. It's hard. But nobody, I've been scolded by Bontemps McMahon for ever daring to bring up how I sleep, because that is big no-no. So I'm not talking about it. All that matters is we're here now.
Wait, I will ask you this, because I asked Malika this. You couldn't have seen this because you were in the Philippines. We were calling the highlights from the Mikal Bridges game, not the one where he hit the shot, but the one before the medal round.
Yeah, against Italy, 24.
And I said, the only thing hotter than Mikal Bridges in the Philippines is lumpia. And I said, Malika, have you ever had lumpia? And she was like, no. And I said, well, it's these little Filipino egg rolls that are just absolute fire. Tell me you ate some for me while you were over there.
Hell no. Ugh. But Eric Spoelstra loves them, and his uncle Tony, his mom's brother, used to make them, freeze dry them, and send them to him in Oregon when he was a kid. But they eat chicken adobo for every meal in the Philippines.
Really?
You get it for breakfast, lunch, dinner. Yeah. Oh yeah, they love it. Chicken or pork adobo. No, I didn't have much of the Philippine cuisine. It's not an insult to the fine Filipino people. But anyway, speaking of rest, Bobby had I'm going to call this a must read. If you can have a must read story in September, the Q&A or the explainer, I don't know what you want to call it, Bobby, that you published on Wednesday when the NBA Board of Governors passed the new PPP, which is not a loan program. It's the new NBA anti-skipping games due to rest rules, and incredibly multi-layered and intricate. And I learned as much reading this from Bobby as anything, because it's going to make a big difference in how things are going to go this year. And Bobby, to me, I'm skeptical. I'm a cynical SOB. I think they're doing this because they're entering the TV negotiations for the new TV deal. We work for ESPN. We're part of it. Okay. I'm not negotiating the deal. I'm a big advocate of the dangers and the poor track record and poor trend of devaluing of the regular season. I think it's one of the biggest things of the threat to the NBA. If you tell your fans that certain games don't matter, they're going to believe you. And I can say that with a straight face, not wanting to hurt players or whatever. I'm just speaking a fact. And so Adam Silver and the league, with a very hard pivot toward basically declaring that the science for resting players, not preventing injury, is not, you know, I don't remember how he put it. It's, you know, it's not compelling, and that basically that they got away and lost control of the resting, and basically with very strong acknowledgement that they're making a hard pivot when he announced these policy changes on Wednesday at the owners' meetings in New York. And this obviously took months to negotiate. I think they did it again because they're trying to boost the regular season viewer ratings because they're negotiating with the TV networks. But you broke it all down. And to me, the biggest thing is that this is only going to affect about 50 players. And where that line is drawn could end up being fascinating, Bobby.
Well, it is. I mean, it's 50 players that could increase when we get to February, which is the All-Star game. If there's some first-time nominations, whether it be, I wrote about Tyrese Maxey, Mikal Bridges, players like that would eventually get added to that. I'm fascinated to see what happens in San Antonio with Victor Wembanyama. He's not on this list of star players, although he probably has the most star appeal out of this.
Well, he's got a lot of national TV games. He does. That should count for something.
So I think it's interesting because this is a player participation policy is something that was approved by the Board of Governors. This was not a collectively bargained, you know, the player association was certainly in a loop on it, but this is not in the CBA. The reason why it's not in the CBA is because there's no player discipline here. There's team discipline. Now the league can say, well, if a player fails to render services, there's a fine amount, and that's in the CBA here. There's, you know, as you said, we've got 50 players here. The days of Anthony Davis and LeBron James resting in Brooklyn on a first game of a back-to-back and then playing the next night on a national TV game. You know, listen, it's going to be up to the Lakers. You know, they're going to be the ones who are going to deal with if they want to get a fine, which is it's $100,000 for the first one, $250,000 for the second one, and then it's $1 million every fine from there. And I'm fascinated to see how the league looks at their investigations. When a team doctor says this player can't play, it's a national TV game, and the league comes in with their own independent doctors to look at as far as the medicals here. I'm also interested to see what happens with guys who are involved in trade talks. Let's say Damian Lillard, and Portland decides, you know what, we're going to shut him down until there's a deal to be made. That's in violation of this, you know, resting policy. We saw a few years ago, John Wall in Houston, I think he would have probably been considered a star, maybe based on All-Star, maybe not, but like situations
all
like
NBA.
That.
He had made All-NBA.
Oh, All-NBA, yes. Situations like that would be, you know, you wouldn't be allowed to do. So there's a lot in this memo. It's funny when Adam Reisinger, my editor, asked me to write it Monday night. I was like, man, I don't know if I can get 1,000 words out of this thing. And then it turned into 3,000 because there's just a lot of meat here. The interesting thing, and I didn't write about it, I was just thinking about this yesterday, is that as part of this new collective bargaining agreement, whenever a team is fined, the Players Association gets 50% of the fine. So if it's kind of, you know, the Lakers get dinged for resting LeBron on a national TV game and they get fined $1 million, well, 500,000 of that now goes to the PA, which is an interesting kind of wrinkle to it here. But, and there's certainly exceptions people can read about it as far as certainly towards the end of the season, if you've clinched a playoff spot, there's a lot of different intricacies there, but it's very different than the 2017-18 resting policy. This one is just more stringent, and there's more rules. It just tightens things up here.
I want to read from a news story written in the fall of 2019 by Om Nyungmusuk, the man who's with us right now. This is a story about when the Clippers were fined $50,000 for calling Kawhi Leonard skipping a game rest. And the NBA at the time, I believe what happened was it was a back-to-back and Kawhi was out and Doc Rivers said, he's fine. He needs to protect his, you know, I can't remember exactly what he said. And the league fined them $50,000 for basically saying that he was out due to rest. And the league made an announcement that Leonard is suffering from an ongoing injury to the patella tendon in his left knee and but has been placed on an injury protocol for back-to-back games. So that was 4 years ago, but under the policy that was in theory under, you know, going on until just this week. And so at that time it was, don't call it rest. It's really an injury. And it's so much of an injury that we're going to announce. I remember announcing to the world, they're like, oh, I guess Kawhi has a patella injury. We didn't necessarily know that. Now, this is the way it is. Now, if the Clippers say that Kawhi Leonard is going to be out with patella injury, the league might come in and say, actually, that was due to rest. That wasn't due to a patella injury. And here's $1 million fine. The possibility of the exact inverse, because Kawhi is a classic example here. This is a guy who has had nonstop knee issues. He's coming off of another knee surgery that he had in the offseason. Are they honestly going to be able to say, and are the Clippers actually going to listen, Kawhi, that second I have a back-to-back, that's a late, I think the Clippers right out of the gate have a back-to-back that includes a national TV game with the Lakers. I got to double-check that.
It is. They play Halloween, I think, against Orlando, and then the next night is against the Lakers.
Okay. What's going to happen with Kawhi in that set of games, Ol?
Yeah, well, so let's rewind back. Well, first of all, the Clippers have become, for better or for worse, the poster childs of PPP. If you looked in the last 48 hours...
Which is interesting, because it was the Lakers who actually got the PPP loan.
In the last 48 hours, every site that has posted something about this, the picture that accompanies it is Kawhi Leonard and Paul George. So
I want to apologize to Norman Powell, who got
I saw that yes, even poor Norman Powell has been in the crosshairs. But yeah, like that instance that you talked about, the Clippers, I mean, it was a matter of Doc Rivers back then was the only guy that ever talked all the time. And Doc sometimes would be too honest and would tell us stuff like that. And then it became the Clippers had to get all their ducks in a row whenever it came to any injury that was involving Kawhi Leonard. Here's my thing that I talked to Bobby about. Last season, there was a time, and for the most part, let me say this. When Kawhi Leonard and Paul George were out, and if they were out together at the same time, usually it was because they both were really hurt. If there was a time when they were resting Kawhi Leonard on back-to-backs, oftentimes Paul George played in the game that Kawhi Leonard did not. It was not really a lot of times that I remember that both of them were out of a game.
I remember a game that was in the afternoon and Ty Lue found out like
I was about to get to that.
Didn't interrupt. Sorry.
Unless sometimes... If the back-to-back, the first game was a marquee game that they felt they needed to get, but usually in a weird way, a lot of times it looked like they were picking the game that they thought they should win, and then they would have their star play in that game. But anyways, this is where it gets hairy to me, and I asked Bobby about this, and when the NBA sends investigators in, what is going to be the process? Because there was one time in the regular season last year, this game really sticks out to me. Both players have been out for about 5 to 6 games, and then they came back in practice on a Friday afternoon. And I remember looking and I saw Kawhi and PG. Usually when practice opens for the media, they're gone or they start to scatter. They were sitting in the far end of the court talking to each other for a long time, and I was like, what is this about? This is strange. And so the organization, Ty Lue had basically said, yeah, they practice full and all indications, he didn't say this verbally, but it basically made it sound all indications are they're coming back tomorrow. They practice full. They pass what they needed to pass. All we just need to see is how they feel tomorrow morning. But I mean, the entire organization was expecting them to play the following day. But the following day was a 12 o'clock game, I think, against Sacramento. Clippers hate those matinee games at home that they get screwed with because, you know, they're the stepchild tenant in Staples or, you know, and at crypto.com. So we come there and it's like about, you know, Ty Lue meets with the media and all of a sudden it's like Kawhi Leonard and Paul George are out. And I remember talking to people in the organization that day and a lot of people were like, what is happening here? These guys look like they were coming back. They're not. I felt the frustration for the entire organization for one of the first times. So just like it feels like we're throwing away games. This is the type of situation. This instance right here is when I think the NBA, what do they do now under this new policy?
Yeah. What if Kawhi's like, I'm not playing. I don't care if it costs you $1 million. What are they going to do?
Right.
Are they just going to say, oh, he's got a sore knee. What are they going to do?
And normally I would say the Clippers would be the type of team that would protect their stars and would say, we'll take the fine because of Steve Ballmer's deep pockets. But I would say that entering this season, the narrative seems to be changing a little bit within the Clippers organization of like, you know, when Ty Lue and when Lawrence Frank kind of set the tone, both of them saying, we got to take the regular season more seriously, which to me was obviously a message saying our stars have to start playing these games. But to your point, and also, I think we're going to get into this about the extension part as well. Like, you know, those two guys, I feel like the Clippers, it's not extension season with the Clippers, whether it's Ty Lue, whether it's Kawhi Leonard, whether it's Paul George. I think this is a prove it type of season for them. But like that early back to back, as you're talking, we can't forget Kawhi Leonard is coming off an MCL injury to the same knee that he had an ACL injury. And it got so absurd, Brian, that during the playoffs last year, after Kawhi had that first 2-game tear, people literally on my timeline were like, Kawhi Leonard is load managing in the playoffs. He was not load managing. He really did get hurt.
He had surgery.
He really did get hurt. But it's to that point where anytime he's out now, people think he is load managing. Well, I don't know what the Clippers are going to do because I think they do have to kind of bring him along a little slowly.
They have no choice. Of course.
And then the other thing about their schedule, Brian, in the last like 6 weeks, they have like 6 back-to-backs. So as Ty Lue was saying, we don't want to be fighting for seeding. We want to play. We want to take these games seriously. What do they do toward the end there when they're trying to gear Kawhi Leonard up for the playoffs? And Paul George, they're going to play those guys in those six back-to-backs?
Apparently. So as I'm reading through the thing that you wrote, Bobby, and I really, you guys got to read it. I'm going through this and I'm saying to myself, these teams, like especially a team like the Clippers, they're going to have to designate a person in their organization to manage this. Because there's a whole protocol for how you have to alert the league if you're going to enact it. And there's, you know, you may have to, honestly, you know how they have these, all these teams have strategy guys who are in charge of like evaluating the relative value of every single second round pick over the next 7 years and all these, you know, different layers of draft strategy and stuff like that. There may need to be a strategy guy at the Clippers who was working 2 to 3 weeks ahead and evaluating where rest and how they can do this and liaising with the league. Like that's how intricate this is. And the other thing is because it's 50 guys, I think it's 49, right, Bobby? 49 guys on this list.
Yeah. And there's 25 teams and 15 of those have multiples. The multiple teams are the ones that we have to focus on.
Those teams. Right. So we're talking about, you know, AD and LeBron, you know, LeBron's coming off a significant injury. AD's always hurt, frankly. But like, look at the team like the Detroit Pistons. Now they're not, you know, they don't, nobody really cares about them on this policy, right? Because they don't have quote unquote stars. They're not going to be on national TV. So they've got Cade Cunningham coming off of a serious injury that knocked them out for almost the entire season. By the way, Cade, one of the guys to watch in your fantasy teams, go get Cade Cunningham because he was a killer in the summer, in the, you know, a couple of days that they looked for the select team, the select team USA. He looked great.
Don't let the sleepers out, Wendy. I'm trying to beat everybody in my league.
All right. Well, anyway, if you're listening to this pod in mid-September during football season, you get the reward. So I'm just saying, like, Cade Cunningham, the Pistons, Cade Cunningham might be an all-star come February, but like they can just with impunity be like, well, we're just going to rest him. And they may be playing a team that has star players that doesn't have this. It's not really a level playing field. So I can see how these teams with multiple stars are frankly going to be pissed off. Even though at the heart of it, I understand what they're doing and I agree with putting more emphasis on the regular season. But like you said, Bobby, the teams that have multiple star players are at, in some regard, a competitive disadvantage here.
Well, yeah. I mean, Phoenix, Booker, Durant, Beal. Durant falls
Beal
into
was
that
out
category.
For a bunch of last year.
Yeah. I mean, Durant falls into this special category of guys who have played either 35 years old or 34,000 minutes. Harden is part of that LeBron, where basically you can send the league a week in advance if you see a back-to-back and you want that player sitting. I think Kawhi will fall. There's a, you know, a special exemption where it's, you know, in here it says the league also detailed that a team can seek approval for a star player to be unavailable for one end of a back-to-back based on the player's prior or unusual injury history. So we could probably put Kawhi in there, but that means, so let's say you play, you've got that Orlando game on the 31st. You want him to sit. Okay. He gets approved. Now you're going to, you know, you're not sitting Paul George for that game.
No,
but you're not sitting Paul George for the national TV game. That's not allowed. So you really have to manage as far as what your schedule is. I mean, Minnesota is another interesting team because they've got four guys with Conley. I mean, and they're younger, Conley, Rudy, Towns, and Anthony Edwards. Like it's going to be fascinating as far as how teams look at the schedule here and determine, you know, is it worth the 100,000? Is it worth the 250? Is it worth the 1.25 to protect? And, you know, and I wrote about it, like the one thing the team said to me. So what happens? You have a back to back. You go overtime. Both your star players, Kyrie and Luka, goes for 48 minutes.
Right.
Next night, you're in Cleveland.
This exact situation happened last year.
Yeah.
With the Warriors.
Yep. Do you rest one and not the other? Or like, what do you do?
This exact situation happened. The Warriors were playing in Boston. They come to Cleveland on a Friday or Saturday. I can't remember which. I don't think it was a national TV game, but it was, you know, the prime game on the Cavs schedule, what they built their schedule, their opposition sales around. They went to overtime. I mean, I think it was like game five of a road trip. I think they might've skipped it anyway, but when they went to overtime in Boston, it became a guarantee. And sure enough, they did. I think Clay, Steph, and Draymond all sat. And you know, with no injury, that would be against the rules.
Not saying stars would go along with this, because I think if you play, you play, right? But what if a team says, in that scenario that Bobby, you just mentioned, okay, we're going to play you our stars for 5 to 10 minutes tonight. We'll just play them
did the Drew Holiday and they played right. Fouled 30 seconds in.
Yeah. And then what does the league do? Like that's even worse. Like, I think the league would have to do something about that. The Wembanyama thing. Okay. So look, I got this from the latest odds from Bet Online in Vegas. Players to not be eligible for NBA awards, which is the 65 game thing, right? Which I also think is why, like, they did the 65 game thing, and then all of a sudden it was like, well, we got to remind these guys it's an 82 game season. It's not a 65 game season, right? But Zion Williamson is first in odds not to be eligible. Number two, Kawhi Leonard. Number three, Anthony Davis.
For that home?
Yes. Number three, Anthony Davis. Number four, Paul George. First team to be fined for resting a healthy player. LA Clippers 2-1 odds. Okay. Second would be the Suns.
No
third
bet.
Would be the Lakers.
No bet.
Fourth would be the Spurs. Okay. When will the first fine for resting players occur? Games 11 to 20. They have odds for that. Games 1 to 10. But teams with most fines for resting players, the LA Clippers are number one with their odds 3-2. Suns second, Lakers third.
I would put Golden State in there. If I was betting, I would put Golden State in there. You know, I mean, you got Curry, Draymond, and Wiggins. I don't think Clay falls in there. And Chris Paul.
Yeah. But Wendy, to your point of having a strategist, is it going to be a medical person? Because if it's a medical person, that person's going to lean toward resting these guys.
Well, that's the thing. So when you've talked about this issue with players and agents in recent years, one of the things that they will say consistently is that they make it look like the player is the bad guy. When in a lot of instances, it's the team saying, nope, we did your tracking data. You're 17% above where we think you should be. And you're sitting either tonight or you're sitting on Sunday or whatever. And so basically what they're doing here is trying to de-incentivize the team from, you know, basically... the team wouldn't say arbitrarily. They would say it's based on science. What Adam Silver is saying is that the science is unproven. The data isn't shown enough. Yeah,
he went as far as yesterday to mention Sudafed.
Yes, because Sudafed, one of the ingredients in Sudafed, the FDA basically said doesn't work after all these years. And so he basically compared resting to Sudafed. And I mean, there's a couple of people who work with us in the media who are big believers in this, who I can only imagine what happened when Adam Silver said that. So, but it's going to be interesting to watch for sure. And this is going to be one of those things that I think whenever there's a big offseason change, whether it's a change to the replay rules, whether it's a change to the hand check rules, whether it's a change to the traveling rules, it's hyper awareness happens early in the season. So the first time this is an issue or whatever, it's going to be a big story and we're going to see it definitely play out.
More Hoop Collective podcast after this.
Now let's talk about the play of the week. The pressure to follow up Hypnotic and Cognac weighing heavily on the team. Hypnotic was in the cup, blue and ready for the play. And boom, Añejo Tequila came in with a smooth assist to Hypnotic's tropical fruit finish. Shaken, strained, poured. It was green and good. The playmaking splash shifted the tempo. Another great cocktail from the Hypnotic team. Every season is Hypnotic and Tequila season. Hypnotic Liquor, Bardstown, Kentucky, 17% alcohol by volume. Hypnotic reminds you to think wisely, drink wisely. For the ones who get it done, Grainger offers high-quality supplies and solutions for every industry, as well as access to product specialists who have the knowledge and experience to answer your toughest questions. Plus, their commitment to being your safety partner can help you keep your facility safe and your people safer. Call or click Grainger.com or just stop by. We've been talking about the Clippers. One of the things that has happened while the World Cup has been going on and diverting attention is Paul George became extension eligible. He has been extension eligible, I believe, Bobby, for about 10 days, give or take.
Yeah. Early November, early September. Yep. Yeah.
Paul George has no extension. Kawhi Leonard has no extension. They don't have to have an extension by the start of training camp, but the fact, you know, Kawhi has been extension eligible since June or July. He's been for a while. We have no extensions here, Ohm. They have 1 year left on their contract, both of them. They make the same exact salary, same exact contract at the max, and then they both have player options in their deal. Obviously, if you have a star player going into the last year of his contract, which is essentially what this is because of their player options, you typically do not want them to get to that situation. And yet we have no extension with Paul or Kawhi. What do you make of this? And well, what do you make of this?
It feels like Steve Ballmer is like not going to reward people right now for basically like, you know, guys being injured and the team having not done what, you know, he expected them to do. Whether it was like Ty Lue not being able to get the extension that he wanted. I think like if they, you know, for everything I've been told,
Ty has, they picked up Ty added like a year,
but I think he wanted a new contract.
And I want a new contract. Yeah. ESPN. I got multiple years left. Let's do the deal now.
Yeah. He wanted a new contract, especially I think after all these coaching salaries blew up with Monty's salary, which is a whole nother thing. That was another thing I heard from the coaches.
I talked, you know, real quick. I talked to him about it. I did a story while I was in Abu Dhabi.
I saw that.
Steve Kerr basically on the record had nothing to say.
Yeah.
I didn't even bother asking Spo. I didn't even bother. Cause Spo and Kerr are going to last year their contracts. And I did ask Ty, and Ty was fine talking about it on the record. And Ty said, yeah, I think it was absolutely spectacular. Greg Popovich announced his contract extension, and the Popovich number didn't come out with the announcement, but Pop had never announced his extension. And then Woj reported the number within a few hours of the extension, and Monty pretty much broadcast. I mean, obviously it, he didn't announce it and neither did the Pistons, but it was very public. And Monty talked about it in his press conference. He was like, yeah, I got paid a lot of money. I did this for, you know, in part for money.
When is the coaches meeting in the annual coaches meeting? Like
they already had it.
Right now? They already had it.
They already had it.
Yeah. I think entering that, some of the coaches I talked to said they were just, it was an absolute buzz in the coaching world about this contract thing. And that's all they wanted to talk about, were the enormous salaries exploding and it's time to start getting paid. So
I'm sure they all toasted Monty and then sent him the bill. anyway, yes,
but yeah,
Ty was like, this is going to help all of us, especially Steve and Spo, because they've got 1 year left and are, you know, in theory negotiating, you know, now. Ty has 2 years left. I'm sure he'd love to have one, but it's not as pressing for the Clippers. Sorry.
And look, let me say this. Steve Ballmer absolutely loves Ty Lue. And I think he knows what he has in Ty Lue. But at the same time, I think Steve Ballmer's finally like, let's see this team do what I've paid this team to do and everything I've done to make this team a championship caliber team. And so I think that also extends down probably to Kawhi and Paul, that there's just no rush to do an extension with them. And I guess if they wanted to do an extension on the Clippers' terms, probably, then maybe we might see an extension at much, much less than what they would hope for.
Maybe the Clippers are like, look, it's not even an option for us.
I think the Clippers want to see how this season plays out.
And Bobby, one of the reasons why you would do that for the Clippers is because the rule changes are aimed at them. And if they sign two guys that can't play, it completely kneecaps them what needed to go forward.
Well, the rule changes also help them regarding an extension, because under the prior CBA, both these guys have a player option for next year. I think it's like $48 million, somewhere around there. Under the old CBA, you couldn't decline that option and then extend for less in the first year. So meaning that you couldn't decline that 48 and then start at 35 for the first year. Under the new CBA, they can decline the option, okay, knock the 48 off, and then start at a significantly lower number and then work their way up from there. So let's say you knocked 48 off and now you're going to start at 35 and then work your way up. And that gives them a lot more flexibility as far as what type of deal they could do. And listen, both guys are, they're not an October 23rd player where there's a deadline here. They have till June 30th because how the league looks at it. Player with in the last year, the player option's not included. You've got pretty more of a runway to get something done.
Yeah. So that's going to be interesting. Obviously at media day, if they don't have a deal done, they're going to get asked about it. So they're going to have an answer. They don't have to have it done, as Bobby just said, but you know, this is something typically that you'd want to handle before certainly the start of the regular season, but most likely start of training camp. A number of other extensions have gotten done before training camp.
Yeah, it certainly feels like it's a, you know, prove it type of season for the entire Clippers organization. That basically, I think Steve Ballmer's just kind of like, hey, if people want to get rewarded, at least this is my thinking, is that if people want to get rewarded, let's see you guys do it on the court. And of course, remember, they're going into the new arena next season. Steve Ballmer does not want to go into that arena rebuilding and a complete rebuild. I think he even said that lately on Paul's pod. But, you know, I think he also, with the way the new CBA is, and it's so restrictive and punishing for teams that pay a luxury tax paying team like the Clippers, I think they are doing their due diligence and watching how to build this team moving forward.
And I know there may be some, you know, they almost had a deal for Malcolm Brogdon, and then that deal fell apart. They tried to trade for James Harden, and that deal didn't happen. And from what I understand, it was the Clippers who said, okay, there's no deal here, we're going to move on. And so I assume that while they certainly could make a deal midseason, I assume that this is what they're going to go with. And I assume this means Russell Westbrook, while they hunted for other point guards, I assume this means Russ will be their starter. It worked out well in the playoffs last year. I think it's somewhat of a mistake to abandon Terrence Mann, who was playing very well when they made the Westbrook move, but whatever, you know, is running it back. That's essentially what they've done. They traded for KJ Martin, which was a nice pickup, but he's a backup. They do have trade assets, Marcus Morris, Robert Covington, expiring contracts. I do think they're a strong candidate to make a midseason trade, but how do you feel about them if they do just say, let's just, everybody, we're going to just play it out for this year and see how it goes? I mean, Kawhi is going to have to play more under the new rules, I guess, and he's potentially going to be incentivized to play more. And the other thing that I'll point out, the Clippers are not without leverage here on Paul and Kawhi. As far as I know, those guys want to be in Los Angeles.
Yeah.
And so, like, if they opt out and become free agents, I mean, I guess somebody could go after them. You know, Philadelphia right now has positioned itself to be a big free agent player. I guess Philadelphia could, you know, swoop in and go after Paul or Kawhi. Are they going to Philly or someplace like that? I don't know. Maybe, you know, maybe it's not the worst set of risk factors for the Clippers to play it out on.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's something that also does really play into, or at least the Clippers hope plays into their favor. As far as how they're going to do this season, I think if those guys are healthy going into the playoffs, I think the Clippers do feel like even if we don't make a move for James Harden, as long as Kawhi Leonard and Paul George are healthy, we know what they can do when they're healthy. We just haven't seen it all the way through. But we saw it a couple of years ago, obviously, when they made it the second round Western Conference Finals. Kawhi Leonard was great in those first two rounds, and then he gets hurt. Last year, it was just Kawhi. Paul was hurt. They were waiting for Paul to come back. Kawhi looked phenomenal in those first two games. Then he gets hurt. So I think they're just like, look, I think Terrence Mann, he can make another leap forward. He's worked hard this offseason. He looks in phenomenal shape. KJ Jr., you know, Kenyon Martin Jr., he basically brings an athleticism. He brings a fire to them that they absolutely need, an ability to run a full season.
Well, also, if they trade Marcus Morris,
he
in theory could step in and be their starting four, depending on what kind of trade they would do there.
I mean, I think they are still waiting to see the Sixer situation and whether it turns into a tire fire here. I mean, like, or just a disaster. Like, basically, if, you know, James Harden tries to light that house on fire, the Clippers would just sit and watch and see what happens.
Well, I don't know. Who knows? Maybe Kobe Brown. I don't know how, but, you know, that's the guy they drafted with the 30th pick. Maybe he looks great. And all of a sudden it's like, well, wait a minute, we might have something here. I don't know. I'm not necessarily expecting that, but it's definitely a complicated situation because I think I think the Clippers weren't sure about whether they needed to go forward with this. And once the new rules came out, and then once Kawhi got hurt again, I mean, Olm, you and I were on that Suns Clippers series.
Yeah.
You remember they won game one and then there was 2 days off between games one and two. That Clippers team was on air because they had Kawhi playing good. They had the possibility of Paul coming back. They liked their game plan against the Suns. I mean, like, I'm not going to say they were like, oh yeah, we got them, but like they had a lightness to them that I hadn't felt around the Clippers in a long time.
Yeah.
You know, they were like, we might be able to do this. We might have a run in us. You know, we spent some time around them. for a couple of days there in Phoenix. And then I remember game three, right? It was like all of a sudden. Yeah. Kawhi, well,
remember what I told you in one of the games? I think it was like game one. We're sitting there and I, you know, Kawhi does this every game. But I think I told you inevitably when a Kawhi looks like he tweaks something and for like about a 2 second thing, he looks like that looks like a little limp. And then all of a sudden it's gone and he's fine. I think I told you, I said with Kawhi, you always have to watch these things. But it's the next day when you got to see if he's okay, not in the game. In the game, he always plays it looks like he's fine. But then a day or two later, something pops up with Kawhi. And then that's basically what I think happened. He hurt himself, I think, in like game one, but didn't think anything of it. Game two played, looked still great. And then it flared up on him, you know, at some point in game two or after game two. And then that's when they found out, you know, it was a basically torn MCL.
Man, rough.
More Hoop Collective podcast after this.
The NFL schedule drops this week, and you can be there to catch all the action live and in person with Vivid Seats. Experience every touchdown, every tackle, every eye-popping play of your favorite team. And to kick it off, Vivid Seats, the official ticketing partner of ESPN, is offering you $20 off your first $200 ticket purchase with code HOOP. That's code HOOP. Download the app or visit vividseats.com today. Vivid Seats. Experience it live. If only starting your fitness journey was as easy as starting this podcast. The truth is, all the lift big, get big, and beach body ready in 3 weeks pressure stops most of us from even starting. And starting is what matters most. It's everything. Wherever you're beginning and wherever you want to be, Peloton encourages you to just start. With thousands of classes to get you moving and doing what you can, even if that's just a 10-minute low-impact class, they have those too. And when you're ready, take it up a gear with a 30-minute live DJ ride. Start with Peloton and find instructors that will keep you motivated to stay on your fitness journey. Learn the basics and build from there. Remember, doing something is everything. Get started with a Peloton bike or bike plus rental at onepeloton.com/bike/rentals. Terms apply. All right. Kevin Porter Jr. of the Houston Rockets was arrested and charged with a felony domestic violence in this last week. The Athletic reported that the Rockets are trying to trade him. I think there's a good chance that he's played his last game for a long time in the NBA. We'll see how the legal process plays out. However, the Houston Rockets have to handle business. And Kevin Porter has a unique contract. He has a 4-year, $82 million contract, but only the first year, which I think is about $16 million. Is that right, Bobby?
Yep.
Is only this year is guaranteed. So the Houston Rockets are in an interesting position. Now, you may say to yourself, well, if he's facing this, you know, number one, why wouldn't the Rockets just cut him? You might say, well, if he's you know, been accused of, you know, striking his girlfriend in the face, causing her to bleed, I believe he's charged with some sort of strangulation and that there's been reports that she has a fractured vertebrae. If that's the case, why wouldn't the Rockets just cut him and say goodbye and pay the money? So, Bobby, explain to us why the Rockets now have to do some strategy, even though this is a complete mess situation on a human level. From a basketball strategy level, the Rockets have to go to do some work here.
Well, I think, there's multiple different options that Houston's going to be looking at. The first is, while this investigation is going on, and if it's not resolved, you know, we're going to keep our distance and you're not going to come to training camp. Okay, like that's business one here. The second order of business, and I've seen this from a lot of people, is like, why don't they just waive him? And they can, right? They can waive him if they want, and they can absorb his $15.9 million cap hit, and they would be off the hook for money going forward. However, if Porter Jr. eventually is found to be either guilty or the league suspends him and he's not under contract, similar to what happened with Miles Bridges last year, the Rockets are still on the hook for that money because he's not under contract with them anymore. So he would still be getting that money here. I think what's interesting is that, and it's a complicated rule in the new CBA here. And the league basically included this language because guys would get suspended on the, like towards the end of their contract, they would become a free agent and teams would be really reluctant to sign that player. So John Smith got suspended towards the tail end of the year for 5 games. He became a free agent. Teams didn't want to sign him to a 10-day contract because he had to serve 5 games. now how the league has language in here, it's called a carryover suspension here. So for example, Kevin Porter Jr. is waived in Houston. He is suspended 25 games. Well, Porter Jr. could just play out the year, not sign with the team, collect his money, and there won't be any suspension the following year because this carryover suspension would basically eliminate anything that the league has put in here. So, and then there's the, you know, certainly the trade component here. And I just, like, from a moral standpoint, and we'll see more at what comes out in this, like, what team out there would want to trade for Kevin Porter Jr., even if the thought was that, you know what, he's going to get suspended, we'll collect some money from him, we're going to get a first round pick and have our name attached to that, even if he never played a game. Like, eventually, like, when we look at Wikipedia and you look at Kevin Porter Jr., it will say, well, played for Cleveland, Houston, and Team A. I mean, that's the reality of it in here. So, but listen, it's a business. And if teams can get draft compensation for a player that Houston is trying to get rid of because of these circumstances, I get it here. But, you know, the one thing that Houston is not going to do, they're not going to waive him. I don't see them waiving him until there's more clarification as far as where this suspension is going to be.
Yeah, if there so is let one. Me. So some people might say, well, why do they need to attach a draft pick to get off of him? Why can't they just do what you're just saying? If they really want to get rid of him, they need to waive him. And here's where the basketball strategy comes in. And I don't mean to be a coarse here, because we are talking about a domestic violence situation where he's accused of doing something terrible. And I'm not disregarding that, but I'm just saying, if you want to try to understand what the Rockets might do here, we're going to try to explain it. If you look at the Rockets books, they've got Fred VanVleet, their big free agent signing, $40 million this year. You've got Dylan Brooks, their other big free agent signing at $22 million. Then after that, they have a bunch of relatively small salaries. And except for this one salary, Kevin Porter, $15 million. If they want to make a trade and acquire a player, having that salary could be important. So in addition to, you know, they're trying to make the playoffs this year. You know, they went out and spent a bunch of money, you know, not only signing VanVleet and Dylan Brooks, also signing Jock Landale. They spent a bunch of money. And so they, I think, would like maybe to get a player out of that spot. And if not a player immediately, even if they can trade him for another piece that they can use for trade purposes later, which is why it wouldn't just be attaching a draft pick to him to just get rid of him and get rid of the problem and get rid of the PR. It would be to get him and be able to have a player to help them now, or have the ability to use that, you know, contract that they bring in another trade. And that's where the strategy comes in. It's certainly not something that Houston probably hoped to be dealing with at this point. They obviously were concerned about some things about Kevin Porter. They gave him a contract that was unique almost in the history of the NBA. Maybe it's somewhat comparable to Zion Williamson, but not really, because Zion's contracts, their guarantee is a little bit different, and they're worried about Zion's injury. In the case of Kevin Porter, they guaranteed him 1 year and had $60 million non-guaranteed on the contract, which basically was like, we're going year to year with you, sir. And this is part of the reason why, you know, he was arrested in Cleveland. He had a situation happen in Cleveland before he was traded that was really a remarkable story. He was in a car that had a single car crash that flipped. He was extraordinarily lucky that he was not injured at all or killed. And he flipped his car on the highway. And when the police came, they found an unregistered gun in the glove compartment. And for various reasons, he walked away from that situation, not only unhurt, but didn't even face a single charge. And shortly thereafter, he had an altercation with some folks in the Cleveland front office and led them to trade him. But he obviously, and the Rockets obviously protected themselves to a certain extent because of his track record. But a Kevin Porter move, you know, here's the thing, Bobby, depending on the team, you're right to put out a press release. I mean, the press release would say, Team A acquires first round pick. And then in the very bottom, Team A also acquired, you know, guard Kevin Porter Jr.
How many first round picks does Houston have? And don't they have like two unprotected Brooklyn picks?
They had the picks from the Nets, so I wouldn't think, you know, those are certainly not in play. I mean, they owe Oklahoma City still things from that Westbrook trade. I'm just pulling up their stuff right now. They've got their own, their 27, 28, 29, 30, their own. They owe the Thunder a pick in 26. That's top four protected. Yeah, I mean, they got some seconds here too.
The Nets, they have two first rounders from the Nets that are unprotected, right?
Yeah, 24 and 20.
They're not trading those.
24 and 26, 25 and 27, they can swap with Brooklyn.
So if another team were to trade for Kevin Porter Jr. and get a first round unprotected pick back from Houston, they could waive Porter Jr., right? And then they would swallow.
Well, Bobby was saying that they might.
What will happen?
Bobby was saying they might not waive him.
Yeah, what you will do is you will acquire him, let him sit on your suspended list until the suspension is over, because you will collect money that he will lose from it, and then you will waive him once the suspension is over.
If you waive him before, like if you acquire him immediately, then waive him. You're on the hook for $16 million. But if you
won't, because there's no games to serve from a suspension standpoint,
which would be the PR price to pay for that team, basically. And also, what is the price of an unprotected first round pick?
Right.
If a team has that type of pockets and say, well, $16 million is worth going to get a first round pick and we'll just cut him because we don't want the PR nightmare either.
Right.
In theory, a team could do that, right?
I'm just saying that the snap concept that just cut him is not. That's what the point we're trying to make here is that there could be a deal that involves some real players potentially.
Well, and there could be the deal too that a team that Houston calls says it has a player that is making, I don't know, 10 and 10. He's got a salary for next year. And the Rockets says, you know what? We're going to be a cap team next year. We can, you know what? We can take back a player for this year and for next year. They get off the Porter Jr. money this year, even if it costs us a first.
Yeah.
So I think there's a lot of.
Yeah, there definitely are some trade concepts that are out there. Whether or not they could ever agree to them and actually get their owner to sign off, that's another story. But there are some trade concepts that are existing that describe Bobby said. Okay, before we go, Ohm, you just got back from East Lansing. You had a sit-down interview with Draymond Green. It was very interesting and newsy. He was there for, what's it called?
Barton Grind Week.
Grind Week, which is like a... reunion week, right? Everybody gets in and puts the helmets on for the defensive drills for Izzo.
I did not see that. Izzo was there though, but yeah, guys come back. You know, the Draymond Greens, the Xavier Tillmans, Gary Harris's. Normally it's Jaren Jackson, but he was with you. And then a whole bunch of older Spartan legends like, you know, Mateen Cleaves, usually Steve Smith, Magic Johnson. Sometimes they stop by too.
And what was Draymond, you know, had some things to say about this upcoming season. Chris Paul and Jordan Poole. Thought maybe you could run through in case people didn't.
Yeah,
see
so he number one was, you know, they're pursuing a fifth championship this year, the big three, and he was like, yeah, the goal is five, but I'm not stopping there. He's like, I don't want to put a number on it, but why not six? Why can't we get two more championships? I think he's feeling a little rejuvenated. Obviously, it was probably one of the most challenging seasons for him, the way it started, the way it ended. I think he's not shying away from taking the blame for that. Understands that the chemistry was fractured last year, but I think he likes that this team has more of a veteran presence. Obviously, they, you know, got rid of Poole, brought in Chris Paul, and that was one thing that he said. He said, this season's one of the biggest seasons of my career. And he says, and it's not about redemption for me. It's basically, I want to help. My goal is to help Chris Paul win a championship, his first championship. And I said, you know how weird that sounds coming out of your mouth?
Oh my
after
God.
All the playoff battles with him. And I said, on a scale 1 to 10, how did you feel about this guy? Before I could even finish the sentence, he just goes, 11. I hated him. 11. He said, but, and he admitted, when the Warriors came to hit those guys and said, we're thinking about getting Chris Paul, he said he had to wrap his brain around it. And he was like, And you could see his face like struggling on camera. He's like, He's thinking more and more about it. And then he said, okay. He goes, but I didn't say no. That was the first thing he said.
It's something else that you said in your story that went along with it, or that he told you.
Yeah.
They did the deal. And then he and Chris Paul connected.
Yeah.
And
he
then
said
they
something
just...
like, he says, like, so yeah, no, after we said happy to, and he cut himself off. So I'm saying like happy to, you know, happy to join forces with you. He said, we both just gave it time and space. Right. He said, we had to give each other just space. And then he said, since then, they've seen each other at the facility. I guess they've had some workouts, some face-to-face conversations, phone conversations. Because I said, how do you go from being hated rivals to now we're on the same page trying to win a championship? Like, because it was so funny, Brian, when he described all the things that makes Chris Paul great. And he was like, this guy's the center of everything. He's talking about everything. He knows what your defense is going to do. He's calling it out. He gets under your skin. He's nasty. He elbows you. And I was
talking about himself.
Yes. I was like, you sound like you're talking about yourself.
The spider. Like, it's the Spider-Man meme.
Yes, exactly. And so, you know, I think he said we got over the first hump, which was we had to digest and wrap our brains around it. The next hump, though, is we got to see how it works on the floor. And I said, well, how is this going to work between you guys? And he said, well, you know, I don't know. I don't know who's going to start. I don't know who comes off the bench. He goes, I don't know who's going to finish. He says, I'm not going to say that Steph doesn't finish on certain nights. But he's like, basically, if a guy doesn't have it on certain nights, we all got to have to sacrifice. And he goes, as long as we're trying to win a championship. I think the one thing he does like, though, is that he knows Chris Paul wants to win badly. Number two, he mentioned specifically, I can't wait to see him mentor Kuminga and what he can do for Kuminga. And so, and then he said, from a leadership standpoint, he goes, Steph is a great leader. I obviously consider myself a great leader, but some nights we're not going to always have it. Chris Paul's going to come in and he's going to be vocal all the time. And so he basically, I think they're looking for that boost that Chris Paul gives to every team in that first season. But you know what it looks like on the court. I mean, this team averages less than 3 seconds of holding the ball. Chris Paul averages like 5.7 seconds.
That was a great stat you had in there. The Warriors average, what, 2.7 seconds holding the ball? Best, lowest in the league, right?
Yeah, it was a second. Pass. Second, I don't remember. Something like that.
Well, they just don't. The other thing is they don't run pick and roll very much at all. The way they get Steph and those guys open is by movement. Move the ball, move bodies. Draymond catches passes, throws passes, sets screens. You know, Steph passes and relocates. Chris Paul averages, every time he touches it, averages holding it for 6 seconds. Bobby, I mean, I've been around long enough to never say never on something working. And I've said this before on this podcast. I didn't think that Harden and Chris Paul would work. I thought it was a mistake. And I remember talking to Mike D'Antoni about maybe February of that season when they were playing great. And I was like, Mike, I didn't think he had it. I didn't think he could do it. And he's like, we always believed. And so I will fall back on that and say that I didn't believe in Chris Paul matching with Harden, and it worked. But this is a hard sell for me, Bobby.
Well, I mean, I have more of an issue or questions with the bounds of the rest of the roster. They're small. I mean, this is a small group.
That's the way Steve Kerr likes it. Trust me, I just lived it for a month.
And then, does Steve Kerr trust Kuminga and Moody in big spots? I mean, that's the reality of it. I mean, they added Corey Joseph Darius Saric.
Maybe he trusts them more with Chris Paul on the floor with them. Maybe that's the answer. You know, like I think, like, okay, here's the way I look at it: are they better in the playoffs moving forward with Chris Paul than Jordan Poole? Chris Paul, I think, you know, he's going to be money on
that. I'll ask a second question there. Do they make it to the, I know, I don't mean like make it the playoffs. Does Chris Paul make it past February with them? That's the first question.
Injury wise or schematic wise?
No, are they going to trade him? Are they going to trade him again? Well,
Because here's the reality of it. Like, do you really think Chris Paul will be on a Golden State, unless they win it all or go really far? Do you think he's going to be on their roster next summer?
Never, ever, 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 ever question the undefeated bird rights of Chris Paul. Chris Paul's bird rights should go in. When Chris goes in the Hall of Fame, there should be a second little pedestal right next to it with his bird rights.
Who's going
to
present the bird rights?
Larry Bird. We have LeBron present Chris Paul and Larry Bird present his bird rights. I'm sure Larry would love that. I say this with respect. Chris Paul's been on this podcast. You know, you guys know how I feel about him. I have immense respect for the Warriors. I have immense respect for Steve Kerr. I have immense respect for Draymond. My God, Steph Curry. And Draymond is saying the right things. Like, regardless of how he felt when he first sent that text or, you know, called him, when you could tell there was like a sour taste in both their mouths, like, okay, All right. See, talk to you in a few weeks, bro. Regardless of how that is, like, they definitely are on the page right now. And so, like, my question is, like, when Ramona Shelburne does a story, like, in March or next June, when she, like, gets inside and breaks down and gets everybody to tell the stories and everything, is she going to be saying, you know, is there going to be a Ramona story that's like, the Warriors put a good face on in training camp, but they knew there was no way this is going to work? And that's what I'm wondering right now. But I'm not there. I wasn't in their workouts. I was in Manila. I don't know what's going on there. But Draymond is saying the right things right now.
Look, I mean, there are going to be times when Chris Paul is going to act like his normal Chris Paul, alpha Chris Paul, and say things. And I wonder how that's going to go in practice or in the huddle with Draymond. You know what I mean? Like, it's going to be real interesting that this guy used to get under Draymond's skin. You know what I mean? And now they got to, like, basically hear each other out as teammates, and they got to fight with each other as teammates. And you know how that goes. And we'll see how that happens. But I do think Draymond learned from last year. I mean, obviously it was, you know, he had that leave of absence after the fight with Poole, and, you know, Tom Izzo had to check on him every day to check where his headspace was at and try to get him to reset. And he even said, I couldn't really lead the way I was capable of. So I think he's excited about that. But yeah, I don't know. I mean, here's one thing he did say. He's called Chris Paul the master. And he said, and I can't wait to learn from him. And I was like,
man.
Okay.
I mean, again, respect. I mean, I respect Draymond saying that. It's the right mindset to have. And look, the Warriors don't do this without a belief in their guys that they can make it work. But again, when I said this a couple weeks ago, I got some blowback on it, but I'll say it again. Remember, part of the reason they did this deal was a salary dump. Just, it wasn't like they looked at this and said, oh my God, this fit is amazing. It wasn't like when the Lakers traded for Westbrook, they did that deal thinking that this was going to work. Mm. A lot of us didn't, but like people who have championship rings were like, this can work. And it didn't, but they did it with the belief that it was going to work. This deal, whether it was 5%, 51%, whatever, was partially done because they were dumping Jordan Poole's salary so that they could afford to pay Draymond and Wiggins and potentially Clay going into the future. So,
but does this
keep that in mind? And this
also improved their locker room after everything they went through last year.
How could it be worse?
Right.
I'll tell you what, Draymond's attitude indicates that it already has.
Yes.
Right.
Yes.
So maybe that's the case. And you know what? As difficult as it is for Chris, sometimes play with Chris Paul, he wins the respect of teammates.
And that's what Draymond said last year. The fabric was off. The team was not together. They were not a team. And he's saying basically this year, we got to get back to that because it was fractured last year. And so I think if you bring in a guy like Chris Paul, they're probably thinking at least in year one, it's probably going to go better than it was last season.
Okay. All right. Well, check out both what Bobby wrote about the PPP policy. It's redundant, the PPP, and Olm's sit down and story with Draymond. Thank you for listening to the Hoop Collective podcast. Thank you to Jackson and Parker, our producers. And we will talk to you guys in a few days.
And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
You see this? A family watching baseball on DirecTV with no satellite dish in sight.
Let's heckle them.
You call that changing the channel?
Choke up on the remote, buddy.
I hope getting all these games on DirecTV makes up for your mother not pre-chewing your sunflower seeds.
DirecTV has the most MLB games. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Claim based on total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package. Terms and restrictions apply.